Modern smartphones are sleek and thin, but they're also fragile and expensive. If you're really careful, you may use it until you're ready to upgrade without shattering the glass. But if you look around, you'll see most phones wrapped in a case for protection. Our personal data is even more valuable than the device it's stored on, and it deserves just as much protection. The work that I do requires me to travel a lot, which means I'm frequently connected to unfamiliar networks. Nefarious hackers can make up to $1,000 selling the data of each of their victims on the dark web, and there are cheap hardware and software tools readily available that let even a smart middle schooler snatch your data without you even noticing. A virtual private network, or VPN, like ExpressVPN, creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your devices and the servers that you're transmitting data to and from. When you're sitting at the airport gate area, or airline lounge, or even your hotel room, those Wi-Fi networks aren't secure. Your bits are flying through the air, and whether you're checking your bank account balance, sending data to a client, or just checking your email, bad actors can snatch up your usernames, passwords, and everything else you send and receive if it's not encrypted. The layers of security used by ExpressVPN would take over a billion years to expose by bad guys with some of the most powerful supercomputers. ExpressVPN trusted server technology also runs each session in memory in a unique virtual space that is wiped clean as you end your session, with none of your data ever written to a hard drive, so there's no residue for anyone to recover about what you were doing after the fact. ExpressVPN runs on almost all devices, including Windows, Mac, iOS, Linux, Android, streaming devices like Chromecast, Roku, Fire Stick, and Apple TV, and there's also a Chrome browser extension. It's super simple to use. Once you install ExpressVPN, it's one click to establish a secure encrypted tunnel with servers in 105 countries around the world. I've personally been paying for and using ExpressVPN for years on all of my personal devices. When I first started using VPNs for work more than 20 years ago, they were often slow and unstable and had to be restarted frequently. But with ExpressVPN, data speeds are virtually unchanged from running fully exposed, so you can just turn the VPN on and leave it on. I often get materials from clients and companies that are under embargo or NDA, and if it leaks out, I can get into some trouble. But even if I just wanted to reach back to my personal server to grab some files, check my email, or watch something that's only available on one of my streaming services at home while I'm out of the country, ExpressVPN lets me do it all securely. Your data is valuable. Don't let bad actors steal it and potentially misuse it. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. That's expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. And you can get an extra 3 months free when you sign up. Expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. And thanks to ExpressVPN for supporting Wheelbearings.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming up on episode 213 of Wheel Bearings, the 2021 Lexus IS 300 all-wheel drive, the new Nissan Frontier, a refresh for the Ford Expedition, and an all-new Toyota Tundra for the first time in more than a decade. Plus half doors for the Jeep Gladiator, and we speculate about an electric GMC motorhome. All that and more coming up next. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is episode 213 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abul Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakelin from, let's go with Kelly Blue Book today.
And Roberto Baldwin is somewhere. Either he has slept in because it's still relatively early on the West Coast where he lives, Maybe his internet is down, which is also a possibility because it was acting a little flaky the other day when we recorded. So, or it could be both. Yeah, right. Could be both. So if he joins us, great. If not, we will continue on. Nicole.
It's
what have
just
you been
the Nicole
driving?
And Sam show today.
Yeah. What have you been
so
driving?
So I'm in a vehicle that I actually, did the launch for, I don't know, a month ago now. I have the 22 Nissan Frontier in the Pro 4X. So I've talked about this on the show already, but this is like a chance. Well, like when we had it at the launch, we took it off-road, which is great because, you know they're taking you to things that are just challenging enough that you can handle without destroying the vehicle, but they give you a taste of things, let you maybe push it a little more than you would if you're on your own because you know they know what's in front of you. You know they've planned it, right? So this time it was more about on-road driving and, I'm taking it around town. I had to run down into the airport in the middle of, Boston, like everyday kind of driving. And I have to say that, so the Pro 4X is the off-road version, right? You've got like extra skid plates and it's got, bigger wheels. It has all these things to make it great off-road that can tend to make a car miserable or a truck miserable to drive when you're on the pavement because they get kind of bouncy and kind of sloppy, especially if the bed is empty. And I was really impressed. After a week of driving this, I sort of forgot that it was the off-road trim. Like it just felt like driving a nice, well-mannered small truck. It was really good. And the styling on this thing is killer. So there's a ton of small trucks out there. And again, this is a car I got stopped in parking lots. Like I was at the grocery store and the guy's like, hey, is that the new Frontier? Want to take a look at it? He's checking it all out. I had a couple different people say like, is that your truck? What is that? So they did a good job on the design. It's a striking design, but I really was impressed with, I know that this has capability. I mean, I did that when we did the launch. I know it can go off-road. I know it can handle dirt and mud and loose gravel and rocks, but as a daily driver, this thing was fantastic. I was genuinely impressed, which I didn't really expect to be. I expected it to have that bouncy, uncomfortable ride, especially in a city where you're thinking, okay, I have exactly 1/2 inch of space on either side of me in this tunnel. And if this truck bounces either way, I'm giving it sideswiping something, and it didn't do that. It was really good. And it is powerful enough. It has a 3.8 liter V6, 310 horsepower, 281 pound feet of torque. And it's not a huge truck. That is more than enough to make this feel really responsive. If you mash the gas to get up to highway speed, it's right there with you. It has plenty of power left over if you need to pass somebody who's a little bit slower on the highway. It feels very well-mannered. So I think what impressed me about this particular loan was, man, you can live with this just as a daily vehicle. If you are someone who just is off-roading on the weekend and wants that capability to have fun, you can still drive it to the office during the week. You can still haul the kids around in it during the week and not feel like you're sacrificing the comfort that you would want in something that wasn't an off-road truck.
Do you have the crew cab version? Or it's just crew cab and extended cab now, right?
Yeah, I think I have the crew cab. Sorry, I had to think for a second. Brain cram. So it's a roomy truck. It's comfortable. It's got enough space. The only thing, my one complaint, here's my stupid Nicole complaint, because there always has to be one. When you unlock the doors, it has a locking tailgate, which is fantastic, except when the tailgate unlocks, it is loud. So when you click the button to unlock the door, it almost startles you. Like from the back of the truck, you hear that unlock. My daughter was
kind of resonating through that hollow metal.
It resonates through the whole truck and it's like kaboom. You're like, no, that's just the tailgate unlocking. Should you need that to be unlocked as you're trying to get inside?
Nice.
So I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it has this cool color. Can't find the paint color, but it's this, because I'm desperately looking at Nissan's website, and I'll be darned if I can find the paint listing. But it's this really dark green. It makes me think of like an army green, like you'd have in an old army vehicle. It's this dark green. So then the red accents that they have like around the Nissan badge and, the red that's sort of trims around the Pro 4X decal that goes on the bed really pops against this. So it's a unique truck. It's a nice color. I like having a color that's a little something different than everything else that's on the road.
You mean that's something that's not a shade of gray?
It's not a shade of gray. Yeah, like the Polestar with its 18 shades of gray, dark gray, light gray, medium gray, off gray.
Yeah, I've seen the Tundra in that green color, and it is a really good color. I'm just trying to pull it up right now here.
I know. I'm trying to find the color, and I literally cannot find the color listing. But it's this really beautiful, like, dark green. And I drove through some mud, and even the mud looked cool on it because it's like dried to this light brown. I'm like, look how cool the mud looks dried all over the side of this truck.
Where is it? Oh, maybe here. Let's try the SV trim.
So yeah, so I'm impressed with it. And I think Nissan did a good job. You know, this hasn't been redone in roughly 100 million years. So it's been a long time. I mean, the engine was new. I think it was for 2021.
Yeah, they put the new engine in for the last model year of the old truck.
Right. So we had one model year that already had that engine. So, you know, you had that experience, but the rest of the truck just felt, especially when you'd sat down inside, oh my gosh, did it look, it looked old. It looked dated. Yeah. It just so desperately needed a refresh, and they did a great job with this one. And let's see, starting price. It starts at 27, I think, 27.8. So you can get into one, not the Pro 4X, but you can get into one for about $27,000. So that's not crazy. And it was a crew cab. Did I say I had crew cab?
Yeah.
That's what I have.
Yeah. So that's about, you know, okay. It's in the same ballpark as, you know, Tacoma the Colorado excuse and Canyon. Me.
Yeah, so this the base price on the Pro 4X is 37.2. It's still not a crazy price when you consider how much truck you're getting, because you're getting a really nice, well-equipped truck with that off-road capability. So you're getting the best of both worlds there. It's still coming in at under $40,000. That's not a bad deal.
Yeah, not bad at all. And you know, I think it's a lot better looking truck than the previous generation. It's significantly more modern looking. Let's put it that way. And yeah, you know, it's got that squared off look that Nissan's been moving to on their SUVs as well. The green color is called tactical green metallic.
Is that well? See, and I was saying it looked like army green, so tactical green. I was on track.
Yep. Cool. What's the tow rating on this thing? Because, you know, one of the reasons people buy trucks is for towing. Do you happen to know off the top of your head what that is?
Oh my gosh, you're asking me and I didn't write down the tow rating. I can find it. I remember thinking that the tow rating was halfway decent and that it actually did pretty good. I mean, if you really want a tow, if you're crazy with the towing, you're going to want something bigger, like go to a full size, what would be next up for Nissan?
Frontier.
Oh my God, what is it? Titan.
Not the Frontier, Titan, yeah.
No.
This is the Frontier.
I had to think. I'm like, wait, what's their other truck? All I had in my head was Tundra because it's been all Tundra all the time for the last couple of days.
Yeah.
Max payload looks like it's 14. I should be looking right at towing, and towing is hiding from me in this giant list of capacities. Here we go, towing. Maximum capacity. So on the Pro 4X that I had, maximum tow rating is 6,270 pounds.
That's not bad.
So that's not bad. It's not bad. If you get rid of all the Pro 4X stuff, you can get a couple hundred. I think it's 6,570 is your maximum if you go by.
Yeah, going with the off-road packages usually gets you a lower tow rating than whatever the maximum is, because the way the suspensions are set up with the longer wheel travel and everything, that usually cuts into your tow rating. Plus, you know, they're also usually heavier because of all the skid plates and everything. So that's not bad. Okay.
It's not bad. Cool. I mean, you're not going to be doing work at the ranch, but that's probably not why you're buying this, you know. But if you want to tow something smaller, 6,200 pounds of towing, that's
yeah. I mean, you can tow a good sized boat. You know, a good sized boat weighs about 4,000 pounds, 4,000 to 4,500 pounds. So you can
tow
that
within the range of being able to do that. Yeah,
that's the sort of thing. You know, that's most people that are towing recreationally are going to be towing something up to about that size. You know, 5,000 pounds is usually kind of the upper limit there. It's when you get into the big travel trailers and horse trailers and stuff. If you're going to tow something like that, then you got to move up to a full-size truck and get that 10, 11, 12,000 pounds.
But I feel like the cool thing about trucks in this, you know, when you go with the smaller trucks, is that you get just enough of the capability and the perks of having a truck without the price of the bigger ones, and without they can be cumbersome. I mean, if you try to drive a full-size truck into a city, It is not fun. It is not fun navigating city streets. And it, like when I've had to drive into Boston with like an F, I had an F-250. I thought this is the worst drive of my entire life. I felt like I was hanging over the sides of everything. Like big vehicles are tough in cities. So if you live in the country and you want to have that and it's your daily driver, have at it. But if you go any place where you have congested parking lots or, you know, a minimum of parking, these smaller trucks can do a fantastic job for less money and way more everyday livable than the full-size models for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, the even smaller trucks that are coming now, like the Hyundai Santa Cruz and the Ford Maverick do, you know, whether they eat into, you know, some of the sales of the midsize trucks. Because over the last 6 or 7 years, the midsize trucks, you know, have really grown in sales. You know,
right.
Trucks like the Ranger, the Colorado Canyon, the Frontier, they've actually done really well. As the full-size trucks have gotten more and more expensive, a lot of people have moved into the midsize trucks. Now with the compacts coming, you know, is that going to add to that, or is that going to eat into those midsize sales? You know, how many of those people are going to move down?
Yeah, I really wonder. I think especially with the Santa Cruz, because that's it's such a quirky little thing. Like the Maverick feels like you took, you know, you went, it's like a small, medium, large with, you know, Maverick, Ranger, F-150. But the Santa Cruz feels like this quirky, fun, little odd duck of a truck. Like, it's like, we want to be a truck and give you some truck capability, but we're not really a truck, but we're kind of a truck. That one, I feel like that one would get a whole new, I feel like that's going to draw people from the SUV. Like, I want an SUV, but I want a truck, but I want an SUV, but I want a truck. Here's where they've mashed together. That's the perfect mashing up.
They're trying to get the people that liked the Subaru Baja a decade ago.
Yes.
Which sadly for Subaru was turned out to not be that many people.
Very small number of people.
But you know, maybe this time, I think this one, these trucks, the Santa Cruz and the Maverick, I think are a little more useful as trucks than the Baja was. And so I think they might do better.
Yeah, I think they'll do better. And I tend to think, my gut tells me that it'll take, especially the Maverick will take a little bit away from like the Rangers and the Tacomas and the Frontiers of the world. But I think it might take more away from SUVs, honestly, because it gives you, you know, it's not quite trucky enough to be a truck, but it kind of is like an SUV that lets you do just a bit more, you know? So that's my guess. I don't know. We'll have to see how the numbers work out, but I bet it's going to take more from SUVs.
Okay. All right. I have been driving this week the 2021 Lexus IS300 all-wheel drive, which, in case you missed it, when they launched the new IS300, looks almost exactly the same as the old IS300. You know, when I watched the reveal event when they did this, it seems like it was late last year or last fall when they revealed it. And I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, okay, when are they going to show us the new one? And then I realized, oh, they are showing us the new one. It's almost indistinguishable from the old one, which is not necessarily a bad thing. It's not that the previous generation was a bad looking car. I think one thing that's really interesting is it's almost exactly the same size. And I think it's mostly the same platform as the old one, because it's like barely 1 inch longer overall, less than an inch longer overall, same width, same height. So if you like the look of the old IS, then you'll be happy with the new one, because it does make some significant improvements in the interior. First thing I noticed when I got in was it still has the dreaded Lexus touchpad.
How I feel about those.
But it also has a touch screen. Yeah, so the screen is within reach.
Okay, then I'm all right
with it. So you can just pretend that the trackpad isn't there. Yeah, you could take a piece.
I'm going to totally ignore it.
You could put a piece of duct tape over it and never notice it again. You'll never need to use it. Just touch the screen. It's
just
all good.
I like your idea. Just put duct tape on your fancy luxury sedan. There you go.
Okay, maybe gaffer tape. Gaffer tape would be all right.
I appreciate that you're bumping it up a level. Okay.
Yeah, use something a little bit classier. You know, maybe a little less noticeable. I've been driving it around this week. I had to go Thursday. I had some appointments across, actually fair ways away. And so I spent, you know, a couple hours driving it. And one thing I noticed when I got out on the highway is how quiet this thing is. Yeah, it's very, very quiet just cruising on the highway. Very little wind noise, very little road noise coming through. You know, even when you get on the gas and, you know, give it full throttle, you know, you don't hear a whole lot from the engine. It's it's a very subdued feeling in there. It feels very composed. You know, I remember back in 91, when the original LS first came out, and I was working at the General Motors Proving Grounds then as an engineer, and there was one in the GM had a large fleet of competitive vehicles that rotated around all the various departments at the Proving Grounds, and I got to try that original first generation LS, which was one of the first two Lexuses ever. You know, they launched in 89, and
yep.
You know, that car was so quiet, but it also was like you were completely disconnected from the road. It was different from the kind of thing you got, you know, with Cadillacs of that era, which were also quiet, but also very floaty and, you know, kind of, you know, that's where the term land yacht came from. You know, it was more controlled. This, you know, this is a much more controlled feeling. It's kind of an in between. You know, at least in the IS300 form, you know, in between the a sports sedan and a compact luxury sedan, where it's got that quietness, but it also feels very stable. There's no bounciness to it, no floatiness to it. It doesn't have tremendous steering feel, but I think, you know, for the customer base that's going to go for something like this car, you know, it's probably fine. The seats are very, very comfortable. At least they were for me. You know, your mileage will vary, as we say. This one is the all-wheel drive, and what's interesting is that when you look at the specs, you know, there's two different IS300s. There's the IS300 two-wheel drive, the rear-wheel drive, which has a 2-liter turbocharged four-cylinder engine. But if you go for the all-wheel drive version, you actually get the Lexus's, you know, or Toyota's 3.5-liter V6. But it keeps the IS300 badge. And then there's also the IS350, which also has the V6, but it's a higher output version. So if you get the rear-wheel drive IS300, you get 241 horsepower from the turbo four-cylinder. If you get the IS300 all-wheel drive, you get 260 horsepower from the V6. If you get the IS350 with either rear or all-wheel drive, you get a 311 horsepower version of that engine. And then there's also now an IS500, which is a 5-liter V8, which if you want a sports sedan, that's probably the one you want. That one's 472 horsepower. So the, you know, with...
So- Do you think when you go from the 300 to the 300 all-wheel drive, when you're getting 19 horsepower, do you think it's still, do you think you feel that 19 horsepower or probably not because of the all-wheel drive, adding extra weight?
Yeah, the extra weight of the combination of the extra weight of the all-wheel drive plus the V6, even though it has more power, actually has less torque than the four-cylinder. So the four-cylinder is 258 foot-pounds of torque. You only get 236 with the IS, so it doesn't feel especially strong with the V6. It's adequate. Mm-hmm. It's more than adequate. You know, I mean, it'll do 0-60 in just over 6 seconds. So it's not like it's slow, but it doesn't feel feel like it's pushing you back into your seat. You know, it's like everything else about this car that just feels very calm and collected. You know, it just gets up and goes. Yeah, so there's nothing exciting about it.
It's a nice, well-mannered, well-behaved car.
Very, very well-mannered, very well-behaved. So, you know, if you're looking for something with, you know, Lexus levels of quality and reliability that, you know, looks kind of sporty, you know, and is a very nice size. I really like the size of this car. You know, it's in that same class with, you know, a Genesis G70, or, you know, the a 3 Series or an Audi A4. You know, I think it's a good size. The rear seat's got enough room for adults. The trunk size is decent. So, you know, it's a very practical car. You know, rather than being humongous, you know, it's going to be relatively easy to park. So I think it's a good option to consider, you know, if you're looking for something that's got the slightly sportier look, is not necessarily, you know, and it has more than adequate performance, but, you know, it's not going to really necessarily excite you. This is a really good choice. And with the all-wheel drive, of course, you know, you're going to have good traction in the wintertime if you live somewhere where we have winter still. It's definitely one to consider. It's got, you know, like most newer Lexuses, it's got the Lexus Safety System 2.5, which is basically gives you all the things you want: pre-collision avoidance, automatic emergency braking, radar, adaptive cruise control, lane tracing assist, lane departure alert, automatic high beams, and so on, blind spot monitors. This one was priced out at, where is the price? I gotta scroll over here. $49,915, which...
So that had some options, because the base is $41,50, right?
Yeah, so this had the Mark Levinson audio system, which is so $2,750. Sounds really good. It's got the rear spoiler, which is kind of pointless on here, but it's a fairly subtle spoiler. Cool. But, you know, it's $400. You know, I think I would probably take a pass on that one. You know, it's body colored, so it just kind of blends in. You know, unless you look really closely, you probably wouldn't even notice it. It has the intuitive parking assist with auto braking, rear pedestrian detection, and a panoramic view mirror. I haven't really tried that yet. I've still got a few more days with this thing. And, of course, the comfort package, which, again, if you're in a climate where you feel all-wheel drive would be a benefit to you, you probably want to go with the comfort package as well, because that gets you the heated and cooled seats, heated leather steering wheel, and also sunroof. So, you know, I think it's...
I would pay any amount of money for the heated stuff in a car. Like, they could be like, Nicole, the car is $50,000, but we're going to charge you another $25,000 for a heated steering wheel and seats. I'd be like, here, take my money. That is my favorite thing to spend money on in a car, because it's so cold here. And when it is 20 degrees out, it is worth every penny that you pay for those two options.
Ever since we bought our Passat 21 years ago that had heated seats in it, my wife will not tolerate any vehicle without heated seats.
I'm with your wife. I'm like, forget it. No, we're not buying it. No heated seats. Move along. Next car. Yep.
So our Civic does have heated seats.
Excellent.
You know, it's a good entry into the Lexus ecosystem. You know, if you like the Lexus design language, and granted, not everybody does. Not everybody's thrilled with the spindle grille. You know, but if you like that look, this is your entry point into that, and it's not a bad place to start. And you know, the delivery charge, unlike some vehicles we've talked about recently, is a relatively more modest $1,025. So, it's a good one to consider.
I can't remember what I was writing about the other day. I saw something, and the delivery fee was only $895, and I was just stunned. I was like, $895. What is wrong with them? I wish I could remember which vehicle was writing up, but I literally wrote the story, look back, I'm like, I must have made a typo. And I go back and I look, I'm like, no, that was only $895.
Wow.
Because they are now. They're running like $12, $13, $15, $1,800. It's crazy.
Well, on the Wagoneer, it's $2,000 now.
Oh, that's so much. That's the price of the heated seats, man. No.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's jump into a couple of stories. Let's start off with the 2022 Toyota Tundra. You've had a chance to seen it in person, right?
I have seen it in person. I saw it in person. We got to do everything but drive it. You could sit inside and take a look at them and open and close things. Although we did have some pre-production stuff going on there. So every now and then you sat inside, you're like, no, please tell me this little bit's pre-production. Because it's just that really, like, they have this fake plasticky stuff they use. You're like, that can't be the real stuff. But it looks really good. And the general consensus was, okay, you did a pretty good job here, Toyota. I think everybody was pretty pleased with it. It looks good. There were some neat features in it. You know, one of the things I like they had, and this is funny, they have an air dam on the front of it that automatically retracts at certain speeds. So if you, you know, or if you're, so the, and then I was looking at it because there's like, if you look inside the truck and you look down into the engine bay, you can see where there's the little motor that actually like works to flip it back and forth as needed. But I was looking at how big it was. And I said, from personal experience, if that thing flips up because you're off road or you're, you know, you're, because it hit something and it's like, oh, I, because it said if you hit, like if you were off-roading and you hit, you know, brush against something, it will push back automatically rather than like snapping. What if you back up and it gets caught in the other way? He's like, we thought of that. It'll also flip back the other direction if you like are dragging stuff backwards as you're backing up back and forth. Because I have ripped off air dams doing that. So I was like, okay, that's good. But that was kind of a neat, that's kind of a neat feature. I thought it was cool. And you could like get down underneath it and actually see how it worked, which was kind of cool. You haven't seen it live and in person, have you, Sam?
I have not. Toyota has not deigned to invite me to any of their events recently for some reason. But
oh,
I have seen the photos of it. And of course, you know, there have been a few leaked images that have popped up over the last few weeks.
Yes.
I'd like to hear your thoughts on this first.
What, just on, in general?
On the way it looks.
Or on something... Oh, on the way it looks. Well, I mean, it looks fine, which I know is like an insult. It's fine. It's all fine. Everything looks fine. It's fine. No, I think it looks good. I know people are sort of polarized on the style. They think it doesn't look unique enough, or it looks too unique. It sort of depends on everyone's point of view. I liked it in person. I thought it looked good. I was pleased. Are most people hating on it?
Is it better than the way it looks in the photos?
I think you're hating on it, Sam. No, I do think it looks good. And I actually, go ahead.
I think my biggest problem, my biggest issue with it is the front end. It's,
okay.
It seems like
I'm
it's a little over designed.
So I can stare at it.
The front end is a little.
Isn't that kind of a Toyota thing, though?
True, but this seems to have taken it to an extreme degree, especially like on the TRD Pro. You know, we have talked quite a bit, you know, here about the excesses of modern grills, and this one just it just takes it too far. I think in profile, it's actually not bad. I don't mind the sides and the back, I think, kind of the bolder wheel arches, it's a little more interesting than before. But just the front end, I think just a little too much.
It is definitely like in your face. Like if this was driving behind you on the highway and someone was tailgating you in this, you'd kind of think, I just have to get out of the way because they're just going to run me down and not even realize they hit me. No, it is bold. You know what was neat in the TRD Pro? They have a light bar that's built into the grill. Like it's like a small, narrow, rectangular light bar.
Right below the Toyota badge.
The top. Yeah, right below the badge. That actually looks really cool. And then they have... that was kind of a neat touch on the front of that. I thought it looked good. And then on the side, the fender flares that are just sort of like black trim on other trims on the TRD, they actually have sort of a pattern that you can feel a little bit, but also see. It kind of makes me think of camouflage, but it's not really camouflage. It's
like a graining on the plastic?
But it's like a pattern. It's not just like, oh, it's a hashtag mark or it's a check mark or something, or like it's like it makes me think of camouflage. I don't know if that's what it's supposed to be, but it's something you don't really see really well until you look up close. Up close, you can even see in the way that it looks. It almost looks like because of the texture of it, it has slightly different shading to it, and it's a very subtle thing, but it adds a nice little bit
Is
of.
It? Oh, okay. I see it now. I see what you're saying.
Do you see what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's like this. Yeah, it's really hard to see. When you're in live and in person looking at it, it looks really good. So I thought, when you just look at the grill, I can see how you're thinking like, whoa, baby, that is a lot of grill. But
you
kind of come around
it.
And you see the whole thing, You can't unsee it. When you come around and you see the whole thing, like collectively, it's, and maybe that's collectively, it's overdone, but it's a little bit more cohesive when you see all the elements in person. I think everything, it works, I guess is that's what I'm trying to say. When you see it in person, all the little design elements they did for that one work. And I do like they have this nifty little button on the side for the tailgate. It's like, it's kind of like makes me think of like, you know, when you open up a tailgate, like on an SUV, and there's that little rubber pad that has a little, you push that you open, you know, that's sort of hidden underneath the tailgate that you push to release it. It has a release like that that's on the side, sort of by the, like, next to the rear, to the taillight on it, that runs up and down. So you could, if your arms are full and you wanted to pop the tailgate, you can bump it with your elbow and it comes out. So it you don't have to like mess around with balancing on one foot and waving or anything goofy. You just pop it with your elbow and it opens right up.
Okay, that's
good. Which I tried. I'm like, can you really do that? And it works. So kind of.
Those are the kinds of cool details feature that customers really appreciate, I think.
Right? I mean, it sounds like a silly thing. You're like, well, that's goofy. Why would you buy for a truck for that? Well, if you've ever tried to struggle to get into a truck or have stuff in your hands a lot, and you're trying to balance or you have to put it down, pick it back up, if you could just pop that open with your elbow, that is super convenient, you know? So I thought that was kind of a neat little touch that they did. I thought that was pretty good. I mean, it was, I think overall, I think people are going to be pretty happy with this. I think it looks good. I think, you know, the test is going to be, how's it going to drive once we all get in and drive it? Because they did lots of things to make it feel better. They now have an available air suspension to make the ride better. They have a multi-link rear suspension. And they got rid of the old leaf springs and went for coil springs. So they did a lot to make it theoretically drive better. But none of us have driven it yet, so we don't know. Like, on paper, it all looks really good. On paper, this should be a darn fine truck to take out on the road. But until we actually, which is another couple of weeks away, I think, when they have us drive it, I feel like it's the beginning of October. So we got a few more weeks. Now we just get the details on it, but no one actually really gets to drive it until October.
Hey, look who's here. It's Roberto.
Roberto, good morning. Did you wake up? He doesn't look awake. I don't think he can hear us yet either. Poor Roberto. No, I don't think he can hear us. We should keep chatting until he says something.
So another interesting aspect of the Tundra, there's no more V8 engine. You got two V6 options. Actually, I think it looks like it's the same V6. You got a twin turbo 3.5 liter V6, which sounds like vaguely familiar. Where have I seen that spec on a full-size pickup truck before? I don't know.
I don't know.
The base setup is just that V6, and then the optional setup is a hybrid version of that, which adds an electric motor in between the engine and the transmission, very much like what you'll find in a Ford F-150 Power Boost. So the specs on both of these, you know, in terms of the amount of power and torque they have, you know, are remarkably close to what you get with the Ford. They've clearly, you know, taken a look at what Ford did. You know, they've been thinking along the same lines as Ford.
Yeah.
So you've got with the base setup with the i4, what they're calling the i4 3.5 liter twin turbo V6, 389 horsepower, 479 foot pounds of torque. The iForce Max is the hybrid, 437 horsepower, 583 foot pounds of torque, and up to 12,000 pounds maximum towing capability. I don't think they've given any kind of hint as to what the fuel economy is going to be, right? Have they?
No, there were no fuel economy numbers when we were there. There was no fuel economy, and there was no, I don't think we had, do we have pricing? I don't think we had pricing. I feel like pricing was a big question mark as well.
Yeah.
They do that whole, we'll tell you closer to the on sale date thing. So.
Yeah, no standard cab, just two four-door layouts, an extended cab and a full crew cab. Three bed lengths, 5.5, 6.5, and 8.1 feet. So, and it's all, you know, fairly standard, you know, what you would expect from a modern full size pickup. You know, it's hitting all the right check marks. You know, I think one of the big complaints.
Oh, and they also worth Well, worth noting too, the bed. They did go with a composite bed. That's a standard thing. So it's a composite.
The interior bed liner is all composite.
Yeah, it has that interior bed liner. So they did that. They said there's steel, there's aluminum. Everybody fights about what's the best kind of bed to have, but they went with this sheet molded compound. It has, reinforced aluminum cross members underneath to help give it some extra strength. But they feel that this is a better option to resist like dents and scratches and rust, better than going with an aluminum or with a, which could, you know, dent more easily or, as you know, something that's steel that could rust and scratch more easily. So yeah, so a composite bed is another big aspect of what they changed.
What about the exterior? Is that all steel?
Well, now you've asked me a question I can't answer. I remember the aluminum cross members. I remember that it was a composite bed. I can't tell you beyond that.
Okay. And then what I was going to say was one of the other big complaints about the old Tundra was the interior. It was, it's kind of old looking. It's been around since 2008. But even when it was new, it didn't feel as nice as some of the domestic pickups. It had kind of, for a Toyota, it had kind of a cheap feel to it. This one, looks a lot more contemporary, a lot more modern. You've got big touchscreens.
Yes.
You mentioned sitting in it before, it was a pre-production model, but did it feel
right.
more premium than before?
Yeah, you know what? Because we had a mix of trucks between, these parts are production, these parts are not. So you kind of had to sort of judge, this is not what this is going to look or feel like. But when you saw parts and you saw components where you knew like, okay, yeah, this looks finished or pretty darn close to it, they did look good. And I think the styling of it, where you could see like, this might not be the leather they're going to use, this might not be the plastic they're going to use, but you could see how the styling was going to look in some cases. And it was styled in the way that you felt like this is going to be good when they're done. And the parts that we could see for that were finished, the trims and things look really good. And they were very keenly aware in all the conversations when we were talking to the specialist, when they were, giving us their briefing before we got a chance to, crawl around all the trucks. They were very clear, like, we upgraded the interior. We wanted this experience to be better for our customers. We needed to upgrade the interior. So I do think that the finished product that we're going to see is going to show that off. It wasn't as if they said, we continued to make the same quality interior we made before. Well, guys, you weren't really up there before. They realized that it needed to come up a notch, and I think that they worked really hard to do that. So I feel good about that. I'm looking forward to seeing, like I said, just fully all production, everything, to get a good feel for it. But I think it's going to be good. And the new infotainment screen, that there's a standard 8-inch screen, but there's an available 14-inch screen. It's fantastic. The resolution is really, really good. It's very, very sharp. There's standard wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, so you can eliminate some cable, some cord clutter inside the cabin when you're driving around. And I didn't get to try this, but they say there's dual cabin microphones. So I don't know if you've ever been in a vehicle, and the bigger the vehicle, the bigger the problem it is. If you say something to the infotainment as a driver, it hears you, but your passenger says it, and it knows somebody said something to it, but it's not... It doesn't pick it up. It's theoretically the dual microphones will make it so it's just as easy for the front passenger to voice activate stuff as it is for the driver, which is kind of nice because sometimes your passenger is the one who's figuring stuff out, not you.
And because they've only got the two engines in there, and even the base engine is would be considered a more of a higher end engine. I'm wondering, did they talk about any plans for lower end versions of this truck at some point after launch, like a more entry level version of work truck?
You know the answer to this question. I'm just going to give you the Toyota line. I'm sorry, but we cannot comment on future product. So yeah, there was nothing about what might happen, what could happen, what's happening a week after they reveal the first batch of stuff. So far, you will get these two powertrains and you will like them or you will not like them. There's nothing else. So yeah, they didn't say anything about what might happen down the line.
Okay, cool. Robbie, are you, you got your sound working yet? So have you had a chance to take a look at the new Tundra yet?
I have not. I have not had a chance to take a look at the new Tundra. I know that Toyota will hold on to a vehicle and a powertrain for as long as humanly possible. They will definitely beat a dead horse and then prop that horse up and then throw a new coat of paint on the horse and then sell it to customers who will continue to buy said horse.
Well, they finally let this horse die, and the new horse is considerably improved over the old horse.
Yeah, the tenders felt pretty. Yeah.
Yeah. It needed it. It needed it. Well, you know, sometimes it's funny. They're doing refreshes. They're doing all new, you know, versions of vehicles. And sometimes you get it like, well, you were talking about the styling on the Lexus earlier, Sam. You know, it doesn't look significantly different. Like, they changed it a little bit, but it still kind of looks the same. Other times they take a vehicle and they're like, we need to do something. And that's the Tundra. Like, we have redone everything. Everything needs, there's nothing on that needed to stay the way it was. And that's a good thing.
Cool.
Yeah. They definitely need to do something with that thing. It is painfully long in the tooth as
Oh, what?
But it looks good now. Or do you not like?
I was just gonna say one other detail we didn't mention is it's got coil spring rear suspension now, like the Ram 1500.
I did mention that.
Did you?
I think I did. I think I said that somewhere. I think I did.
Okay.
Yeah, they changed the suspension because now they can have the fancy.
You mentioned the air springs. They've got the air spring option. I couldn't remember if you mentioned the coils.
Yeah, they got rid of the old leaf springs and they went for coil springs instead. Yeah.
Yeah, so that should give it a lot better
just
ride
on the
quality.
Rear.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the air suspension is just for the rear. It's not for the whole thing. So.
Oh, okay. No front air springs?
No front, just for the rear. They kind of said that it was, from what I understand, like, okay, it'll make things better, but it's also supposed to work a lot for load leveling if you're carrying a trailer or towing a trailer. So it's to help with that. So I think they intended it more to be making towing a trailer easier, not as much making your ride overall better, although we'll do that too. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why they just went with the rear for the air suspension.
Okay.
Sort of. All right. Essentially.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the only other full-size pickup right now with coil springs on the back, I think, is the Ram. Mm-hmm. You know, the F-150 Lightning, the electric version, is going to have coil springs. But all the other F-Series and the GM trucks are still leaf springs on the back. So, you know, I think that, you know, it's a good step forward to, you know, that'll make these more, definitely a lot easier to live with.
Agreed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, on the refresh front with new truck type vehicles, this week Ford is also launching a refresh of the Expedition, their full size SUV. They already revealed a refreshed Navigator about a month or so ago, and basically a lot of the same changes, same types of changes are going on this vehicle in terms of some of the technology changes. So, for example, it's going to have, as an option, the same 15.5-inch tablet-style display that's in the Mustang Mach-E and in the F-150 Lightning with the volume knob that's glued onto the screen. And then the base setup is a 12-inch touchscreen display, all with Sync 4. The only real visual changes to the Expedition this year, the front end, new grille and new lights that kind of draw somewhat on the look of the latest F-150s. So they've got what they refer to as the C-clamp signature lighting, or, you know, that goes around. So you've got the headlights themselves are within the horizontal bar, you know, that stretches out from the grill into that corner cluster, and then the signature lights wrap around that, looking like a C clamp. And they use that terminology when they talk about the F-150. That's kind of their theme, you know, because it's this working, you know, truck that you work with, you know, so you got to clamp things down. So they brought that to the Expedition. They've got two new trim levels this year. One is the Timberline, which is the off-road version. They already launched a Timberline version of the Explorer earlier this year. And I think we'll see Timberline versions of probably the Escape and the Edge before long as well. So this has got beefier suspension. It's got two-range transfer case for the automatic four-wheel drive with a crawl ratio. The standard engine across the board on the Expedition is the high output 3.5-liter EcoBoost, 440 horsepower, 510 foot-pounds of torque, which sounds vaguely familiar. I think we just talked about something that was very similar to that. And then there's also the Stealth Performance Edition, which, you know, it's hard to think of a full-size SUV like this as being remotely stealthy. But
just it's going to sneak right up on you. You'll never notice.
It's got black wheels and mirrors and things like that. So it's a little more subdued looking, you know, but still, you know, huge and comfortable.
It looks like a cop car.
Yeah, if cops drove Expeditions, that's kind of like what it would probably look like.
Yeah.
So I think it's neat that it says, I think it's, is it just on the Timberline edition? It's going to have that trail turn assist that was a feature on the Bronco.
Yes.
Which seems, go on.
Which is like really cool on the Bronco because it makes sense because you were doing some hardcore off-roading in that sucker and you might need to do that. Are you doing that in an Expedition? Are you going to need that? Maybe it's just to get into a parking space.
Actually, that's probably where it would be most useful in a vehicle like this.
Right?
You know, I mean,
like you're not going to use it as much.
A 20
like,
plus foot long, you know, three-row SUV. Are you really going to go off-roading? I mean, you know, you do as part of the Timberline package is you get the same front skid plate that's on the new Raptor, you know, so plus, you know, additional skid plates underneath to protect all the hardware. But really, you know, are you going to take something this huge off-roading?
Can you imagine? Yeah, right. And it even has a higher ground clearance. I don't know how much higher, but it says it has a higher ground. So it's higher ground clearance.
10.6 inches ground clearance.
Extra skid plates so you can follow your Bronco to your cabin. Who's gonna? I just can't imagine taking a vehicle this big someplace where you really need that. But somebody will, I guess. It would not be me. I would choose a different vehicle.
There are probably tons of dirt roads up to like cabins and hunting cabins where there's like one turn where someone with an Expedition had to do like a 50-point turn because the thing is gigantic, and they went back to work and they're like, you know that trail, you know that trail turn assist.
Would be really cool.
That'd be great on the Expedition. We're like, yeah, but it's like so big and it's the wheelbase and the turning, like it's just going to drag that tire. No. It's going to be fine.
It's going to be amazing.
I feel like it's just going to drag the tire and it's not going
to. Just like pull half the truck around. drag it along. Yeah, I want to know who uses that. If you buy an Expedition and you're listening, I want to know if you actually use the trail turn assist for anything other than wedging yourself into a parking space.
I do like the dark green color that they have on the Timberlines. That is a good color though. So I think that'll be a nice addition to the palette.
Is that the color? Is that an orange little accent trim or a red little accent trim?
I think it's red.
Green? It looks cool.
Yeah.
It looks either way. It looks really good, and it looks like there's matching red tow hooks in the picture I'm looking at.
Yeah. One of the other things.
Green never goes out of style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the other things they did upgrade for this year for the 22 is it's got a new version of their Pro Trailer backup system, which you know they launched I don't know 3 or 4 years ago, and when they first launched it on the F-150 and then on the Expedition. At that point, you actually had to put like a little barcode sticker on your trailer that the rear camera would use to track the angle of the trailer. So as you're backing up, for those not familiar with Pro Trailer Backup Assist, when you engage that, It pulls up the rear camera on the screen. And instead of using the steering wheel to back up, and if you've ever tried to back up with a trailer hooked up, it's kind of a complicated process because you actually have to turn in the opposite direction of where you want the trailer to go. So if you want your trailer to go left, you have to turn the steering wheel to the right. And so the Pro Trailer Backup Assist gives you an extra knob on the steering wheel that you actually use to steer with, and you steer it, you turn it in the direction where you want to go. Not necessarily where the physics would tell you you should steer it. And then it actually handles the steering of the steering wheel. And you used to have to use the sticker on the trailer itself that the camera would track the position of. Now you no longer have to do that. They've upgraded the software in there, so it can do that just looking at the trailer itself. We'll see how well that works when we get a chance, but I think that's a nice extra detail too.
I mean, it's cool. Like anytime you can make trailering easier for people, but teaching people how to do it the wrong way seems bad.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because they're going to get into another vehicle and they're going to turn it the wrong way. I feel like you could say, hey, where do you want your trailer to go? And then the car could like say, okay, now turn it this much. And we'll give you a little hand. We'll show you how to do this. I think that's, but you know, maybe I'm just a weirdo.
I'm terrible at backing stuff. I've only had to back up a vehicle with a trailer a couple of times, and it was like at events because I don't generally have a need to tow a trailer. I'm like, oh god, I'm so nervous. Which way am I turning the wheel? Ah, I forgot how to drive. How does this work? Like, I panic every time.
I my first job was working on a school farm, and I had a back a giant horse trailer into like these really small spots to pick up horses and animals and whatnot. And I got really good. And when I first started doing this job, I got trailers, I was like, oh, I probably lost that. But no, I still have it. And it's my one superpower. And my other superpower is able to back a vehicle up to the tow hitch without like on the first try. But no one's ever around when it happens.
So you can't prove it. So it's your superpower, but none of us have any proof of this.
Yeah, but no one has proof. So I am.
So you could be making this whole thing up. You could be just as bad at backing up a trailer as I am. So at some point when you and I are both at the event, it's easy for me to prove that I stink at it. But let's see you actually back one up.
Yeah, see, and then you know what? It'll be the pressure. I think it's mostly because no one's around, and I'm like, I can do this.
As soon as someone's watching, you'll do what I do.
Taking out mailboxes, hitting other cars. Horses are running free. I'm not sure why they would give us live horses at this event, but why not? Like, you said you're good. We heard the podcast.
We heard you can do anything, so there's live horses in here. No pressure, Robbie. Yeah, no pressure at all.
They're going to be jumping up and down and moving the trailer while you're trying to back it up. I'm like, okay.
Okay. Let's see. What else? Oh, Any other thoughts on the Expedition refresh? This should be coming out early in the new year, is when it'll be available.
No, I think it looks good. I think it'll be good. We'll see.
Yeah, they'll sell a bunch of them.
I really hope the drive program takes us someplace where I can have a reason to use Trail Turn Assist. Please do that, Ford. Show me why you put that. I want you to take me off roading so I can do that.
I suspect they will do that.
Yeah, I haven't been on a Ford drive in, I was going to say a year and a half, but then there's a lot of drives I haven't been on a year and a half. But they always seem to like this is a thing the car will do, and they'll have like something to show you how they do it. So I think they would.
I hope so.
I would think so. Fingers crossed. Well, if you're listening to us, Ford, we want to find a tiny little place to turn around, please.
Yeah. They definitely emphasized that a lot when we did the Bronco drive. So I suspect that
they did.
And especially for this one here, I think we'll see them do it again.
And to be fair, it is a really cool feature on the Bronco. So
it is. It absolutely is. And the kind of places where, you know, the Bronco is designed to go.
Roberto's dog objects to this, or maybe he's chiming in. He too thinks the Trail Turn Assist is really, really cool.
Okay.
I have no idea why he started barking. He's off in the other room now.
So dogs will do that.
About that.
No worries.
All right. So also this week, Jeep announced the availability of the dual door group for the Gladiator. They had already launched this earlier in the summer for the Wrangler. And since the Wrangler and the Gladiator use the same doors, it makes sense to offer the same option for the Gladiator as well. So dual door group gets you half doors for the Gladiator, which have no frames around the windows. So, you know, if you want, you know, that sort of open air feel, but without, you know, while still having at least some modicum of protection from doors, you know, if you're not quite comfortable with driving around completely doorless, you now have the option of the dual door group. The one detail with this is on the Gladiator, the dual door group cost $4,395 for half doors. With that, you actually do get two full sets of doors. So you actually get eight doors with this. You get the standard framed doors, and you also get the half doors. But still, that seems like a lot of money for half doors, don't you think?
Wait, so you get
eight. Wait,
no,
what?
Wait. So you're buying four doors though, right?
You're actually buying eight doors.
You're buying eight doors. What?
So what happens to the doors you have? So now you have eight doors you have to store?
Well, you get eight doors. So you get the four regular doors plus you get the four half doors. So really you
are... Is this an option that you can only get when you buy the car? Like it happens when you buy it, so you're getting your normal doors and the extra doors?
It's not... I don't know. Pricing. Yeah,
Factory full and half... It sounds like this is something you get when you buy the vehicle.
Yeah, then okay, it makes sense. Then you get eight doors. Okay, but you would get your normal doors.
You're still paying $1,000 per door.
You're paying $1,000 for these extra doors. For the extra doors.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which are only half size. Wow, that's expensive. Which are only half size. You're going to have havesy doors.
With little plastic windows, though. You know, little zipper plastic windows.
Yeah,
situation.
Yeah, you do get those.
And on one hand, I'm like, this is insane. On the other, I looked up the price for the little charging cable for the Kona that we bought, the Kona Electric. It's like $1,200.
Is it really?
For an extra charging cable?
It's not, and it doesn't, no, just the charging cable that came with the Kona. I was like, oh, these are probably a couple $100. And so I was looking it up to see how much power it could accept. And it doesn't matter anyway. I just plugged it into it to 120. But it's like $1,200. I'm like, I could buy a whole charging station, like a level two station for that much money. So automakers have lost their minds.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever looked up the price for a charging cord for a Tesla? It's about $3,000.
How much is it?
It's $3,000.
What?
Yeah. Well, so Hyundai's, you're getting a deal from Hyundai.
But you also pay $10,000 for a thing that's not even out yet. So,
well, there's that.
I mean,
for some vaporware.
For some. Like here. It's gonna go up. That's not how technology works, but sure, fine, whatever. So I think people are buying a Gladiator. Let's say they get a 5-year loan. That's only a few bucks a month.
It's a few bucks a month for your half a door.
For a half a door. It's also more expensive than my first car. And almost as expensive as my second car.
Your first car was less than $4,590. What did you buy? A Yugo?
I bought it was my Roadster. I bought it for $1,500 in 1989, I think.
Okay.
90 maybe?
My first car was $10,000.
Wow.
On the money. Exactly 10 grand.
Wow. What'd you get?
I got a 91 or 92 Jetta. Volkswagen Jetta.
Ooh.
GL. Mm-hmm. It was red. It was fancy. I loved it. I had Farfig Nugent, baby.
Farfig Nugent. They need to bring Farfig Nugent back.
I think I paid $4,800 for my first car that I bought myself, you know, that I wasn't driving my dad's car. And that was an 84 GMC S15.
Okay.
Wow.
So
my second car was $5,000. That was my 90 Honda Civic.
Oh, you got pricier then, all the way up to $5,000.
Yeah, wow. I had to get a loan and everything.
Big spender, Roberto.
First car, though, I had to save up all my nickels and dimes and pay for it.
Okay. Last item here. recently I saw somebody had posted something about the, they had posted a picture of a GMC motorhome. And I don't know if you remember the GMC motorhome from the 1970s. They were built for about, I don't know, like 6 or 7 years. And it was a really cool looking RV. Yeah, at the time it was very, very modern looking for the, for its era. And it, I know what it was. Somebody had posted a little thing, but GM actually still has one that they use at the design studio when they're doing viewings out in the courtyard. So at the GM Tech Center, they've got the big design dome. And sometimes they want to show off the cars outside in the courtyard under natural light instead of inside the dome. And, of course, you know, in the wintertime or, you know, when it's cold, you know, the executives don't necessarily want to be standing around outside. So they have one of these motorhomes that they have side that the windows actually flip up horizontally so they can sit inside. But, you know, look at these things, you know, under natural light. Look at the designs.
Like they're in a bunker. Watching a nuclear blast.
Exactly.
Little goggles.
But anyway, seeing the GMC motorhome again got me thinking that, I know like over the last year and a half, a lot of people have bought motorhomes or rented motorhomes to take vacation trips, you know, because they didn't want to fly and, you know, things like that. So a lot of people have gotten into RVs again. And so I was thinking, you know, that was such a futuristic design back in the 1970s. It wouldn't take much to, you know, update that a little bit, you know, put some modern headlights on it, things like that. You know, back in the day, it was actually front-wheel drive. They had the powertrain from an old Toronado in the front of the GMC motorhome. But that would be a perfect application to take the new Ultium electric powertrain system, battery and everything, and start building those again, but make it electric. What do you think?
You know what? I'm looking at them, and you're so right. Like, it would take very little tweaking to that funky 70s design to make that look like a futuristic 2021.
Yeah, it would fit right in the 2020s.
It really would.
Make it electric?
I don't see why they wouldn't do it. It seems like a no-brainer, especially, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm looking at an article I wrote last year about van life and how there was a huge increase in retail sales. And then, of course, also in like Winnebago and Cruise America had a huge increase. So there's definitely people out there who are buying these, and I don't think that's going to stop. I think there are people who have bought them, and then their neighbors see that they bought them, and they're like, you know what, flying is still a pain in the ass, which it is. I fly all the time. It's a pain in the ass. And it's you know, I do love a good road trip, and I think people are kind of getting used to a road trip. So yeah, an electric. And then you just go to the RV park and you plug into that 240 and bam.
You're done.
You're done.
So I Googled because I had to see what this looked like. And somebody has done one that is a lifted one with these huge knobby tires. And it looks like a steel bumper on the front and like extra. You could make an off-road version. You could go off-roading in your motorhome.
And put trail turn assist on it?
I would. With trail turn assist, that is the ideal application for trail turn assist because you will need it in that thing.
Yeah, and you got torque so vectoring, cool, so it's an EV, and so
that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I want one of those. Build that GMC. We will all buy it.
Yeah, I mean, they're already building a 9,000 ton, pound.
Right. This will only weigh maybe one more pound than the Hummer, so yeah. It'll be good.
Yeah, you can put a fridge. And an oven, and you can make
all
EV and make it like super clean and very eco-friendly, mm-hmm. and it'll be quiet as you're driving around the mountains. And it'll be all the things that Rivian wants to be and the 4xe want to be and all these other vehicles, and you can just package it and say, ta-da. Also, there's everyone's losing their mind over the ID Buzz, the micro bus that's coming. Yeah. Like that's one of the reasons why we didn't.
Yes.
It's sort of low on the list, but also, like, we didn't buy our Kona. We leased it because, hey, the microbus is coming.
The microbus is coming. You're holding on for the microbus, huh?
The microbus is coming. Everyone watch out.
On the Google Images search page, you know, if you scroll down, there's actually a picture of just the motorhome chassis, and you can see. I mean, it's a perfect skateboard. You know, take out that big old Oldsmobile V8 in the front there, just put in a little electric motor in there, and about 300 kilowatt hours worth of batteries. You know, that'll be, you know, you could drive all day on that, plug it in at night at your RV park. It'd be perfect.
That would totally work. Oh, my God, it is. It would totally work. That could hold some batteries. Look at that thing.
Especially with today's space-age lightweight materials, they could save some.
Right?
Oh.
Now I want this to happen. It's not going to happen, but really, they should
make it happen.
We should
start a petition. Can we do one of those petitions? Don't those change the world?
A cheap.org petition to get GMC to build this.
Yes, definitely. We'll do it. All right. Hey, Bo.
Dog says so too. See, much like he likes the trail turn assist, he's all about this.
All right. Okay. Well, that's the only question we got in on Twitter today. Actually, it was more of a there was two. Actually, I can't remember where the other one went. One came from Harold Combs about our comment, our discussion last time about towing in Europe. And apparently in the UK, if you're towing, you can't go more than 60 miles an hour. Still looking at trying to get some more information on towing in Europe and why some vehicles in Europe are allowed to tow. And then the other thing that came in, and I can't remember who it was now, but somebody yesterday, as we're recording on Sunday, yesterday Cadillac started taking pre-orders for the Lyric, and one of our listeners, it was Critical Grace Theory, said they tried to log in to place an order for a Launch Edition Lyric. And the orders opened up at 4 p.m. Eastern time yesterday. And by 4:13 p.m., he was having trouble even accessing the website. I guess it was overwhelmed. By 4:13, when we finally got in, it said that reservations for the Launch Edition were already full. And he feels a bit cheated.
How many did they build of the Launch Edition, did they say?
That's what he was asking. Cadillac has not said. I have reached out. I heard from somebody that it was about 1,500 of the Launch Editions, but Cadillac has not announced how many there were. I wouldn't be surprised if it was probably no more than about 1,500, but we will try and find that out for next week.
I feel like they should have, I don't know, maybe I'm crazy, but it feels like they should have built more, because I think everyone who went and saw that ahead of launch and looked at it, we were all like, this is a good value, and it seems like it'll probably be a good car. You know, we haven't driven it, obviously.
Right.
But I think based on that, people who are like Cadillac fans and are EV fans and are like, yeah.
All
I think
in.
They want
something
nice. Yeah, I
mean, nice 60,000 for the Launch Edition is pretty impressive. And that's pretty much loaded. Like the only thing it doesn't have is the all-wheel drive, which is coming later, the two-motor all-wheel drive.
Wait, and so you can't order one at all right now then? You have to wait until orders open up for the next batch? Reading what they have on the red site, reservations are full. The Lyric debut edition is full. More vehicles will be available to order in summer of 2022.
Yeah, that's a...
That's what it literally says on their website
right
now.
It's like a sneaker drop. They just...
Yeah.
Boom, get it now. Ha ha. The rest of you guys can wait
now
for a year.
We're going to have to buy the other ones on Instagram or eBay.
eBay.
Like, I got a Cadillac Lyric.
Bring a trailer.
They're going to open the box.
Yeah, bring a trailer. It costs $60,000, but I'll give it to you for a cool $120.
Yeah.
Oh, bring a trailer. So expensive.
Yeah. Before we go, Robbie, did you have anything that you were driving this week that you want to talk about?
I didn't drive anything this week. I've been just incredibly chaotically busy with other things, and I just didn't have time to get a car in. That's
slacker.
The truth. I know.
Slacker,
I have to.
Robbie.
It turns out I have to write about all the things that I drive, and then I also write about other things beyond. I'm 85% automotive, but then one of the reasons I went freelance is that I could do like just weird other stuff.
And so there's some of that weird other stuff is catching up to me. And they're like, hey, buddy, where's those articles? Where's that profile on that dude?
Where's
that
story you promised?
I know. I'm like, if you want to get paid,
we need some words.
I know. If he wants to get paid, we need
If he wants the monies, you will write the words.
Yeah. So, yeah, I unfortunately, I didn't drive anything this. I drove my BRZ around.
That's all right.
Yay.
Mostly I was at home putting in.
Do you have something on tap to drive next week? Did you schedule anything for next week?
Next week I'm going to go look at something I can't talk about. And then I'm also going on vacation, so I'll probably... I'll probably be driving a Chrysler Pacifica or a, what's the other one? The Chrysler Voyage?
Voyager.
Dodge Voyager, Chrysler,
Now they have a Chrysler Voyager now.
Isn't it?
It's basically
right,
just a decontented Pacifica.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I I'll probably be driving that because we're going on a little vacation and we like to take the dogs. And when we take the dog places, we get a van. So we get a minivan. They're.
If only you had that GMC motorhome right now.
I know. If we had the GMC motorhome, we could fill it with dog hair and
It would be perfect.
And just cruise it on up. We were like, oh, we could put him in the Kona. I'm like, oh, that's too long. It's like a 5-hour drive.
That's not going to work. I've seen your dogs.
They're just like, no. So, next, and then maybe the week after I'll have something. Oh, I'm supposed to get a motorcycle at some point. There we go.
Perfect. All right. Well, in that case, let's call it a show, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.